Simpsons podcast. My name is Terry.
My name is Andy.
What's up, Andy? How are you?
I am well. And how are you, Terry?
I too am well.
Well, we are on to season 4, episode 2 on this podcast.
Of a streetcar named Marge.
Yes, indeed.
Maybe we should just touch on the first episode we did.
Yeah, I got some good feedback on it. You know, people just liking it, and you know, like I was saying before, that it's sort of like you don't think of season 4 as being ones that people would really, not that they wouldn't remember, but they wouldn't remember as being as funny as like season 5 onwards. But there's actually some gold. Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah. I caught that too. There was loads of surprises where I was like, it's like, huh, this is season 4 as well.
Oh,
I should mention as well, if we sound a little funny, it's because we're now trying this over Skype for the first time.
Via satellite.
Now, your audio is dropping a bit there, Terry. Can you pull the mic any closer to your mouth?
How about now?
Perfect. Yes, sir. You got any good goss for us?
Well, not so much goss as facts.
Cold hard facts, yes.
These are facts. this original air date was 1st of October, 1992.
Wow.
Scored a very healthy 8.2 out of 10 on IMDb.
Interesting.
I think that's about right, though, I think.
Well, yeah, well, I don't want to give away my rating at the start, but because I was saying before, like, Matt Groening called it one of his favorite episodes, and I think, again, we were saying that, you know, it's got a lot more heart, I think, this season, you know, so I could see why the writers would have a very special sort of fond memory of it, you know. I liked it. There was a few points in it where I thought like that was done very well, you know, like where he's doing the Hey Marge and all that sort of stuff. I thought that was that was just funny, like, but apparently like the animation was quite hard. There was like a lot of issues with it or something like that. Do you know any more about that?
This is the last episode that has been done by Klasky Supio, I think is how you pronounce it.
I was never sure how to pronounce it. A personal favorite.
I knew I'd get you whatever. But you can tell when it changes going forward. Now that I know, like, after the fact.
I'm
like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. Like, you know,
it definitely, like, I notice in a lot of the earlier episodes, like, their eyes are massive in certain scenes.
Yeah.
Like, or they're looking a little bit cross-eyed, or, like, it's not as crisp, you know, but. It's not even that it's worse, it's just that it's different, you know?
It's different. Like, if you compare this episode to the episode where Bart gets a bigger brother, which is also in season 4.
Is it?
The animation is miles apart, I think. Like,
yeah. Even just from remembering it, that seems like a season 5 or 6 episode or something like that.
It's the same series, like, but it just, the animation seems streets ahead.
No pun intended. I should also point out that this episode got a Nielsen rating of 11.8, which is an equivalent to approximately 11 million viewers.
Wow.
I know.
They wouldn't get that these days.
Too many channels, innit?
And just, I think my last piece of trivia was, apparently there's a lot of controversy over that New Orleans song.
Yeah, I never noticed that song before. Like, you never really stopped to listen to the lyrics, but it was only when I read about the controversy.
I remember catching it on Channel 4 one Sunday morning or something, and that song was edited out.
No way, really?
And I was just after Katrina, so I was like, oh, it's because Hurricane Katrina or something like that, but apparently not. Like, apparently at the time it was a big deal, just the way they were sort of.
Yeah, and apparent, apparently, like, one New Orleans newspaper published the lyrics before the episode aired, which prompted numerous complaints to the local Fox affiliate, and then they issued an apology and all this sort of stuff. Get over it.
This episode also has one of the all-time great guest stars.
Oh, yes.
John Lovitz.
Doing two voices in this, which I was very surprised by. I did not know that he also voiced the daycare center lady.
So he was played Llewellyn St. Clair and his sister.
Even when I hear the name Llewellyn St. Clair, I just laugh.
There's more characters he has voiced in The Simpsons. Can you give me at least three?
I can give you the movie critic, whatever that is. I can't think of his name. The movie critic, of course.
Die Hard Simpsons podcast. You can't think of
the Die Hard really comes from your end. I don't know. Who else was he? In which?
Homer and Marge, their young life, their adolescence.
Oh, is he Artie Ziff?
He sure is.
Oh, of course. I'm so ashamed.
Busy.
It would hurt the town to hear it.
Damage the town, but whatever. and then I had to look. I remember he played like the rival power plant owner when they had the softball.
Oh, really? I did not know that either.
I knew that one, but then the other ones I had to look up. Apparently, he played the art teacher when Marge was painting the Ringo stars.
Oh, yeah. Mr. Burns. It's all coming back to me now.
He played some character in soap opera that Marge is watching one time.
What a bit part.
Yeah, well, I had a friend of the show. And he played paparazzi guy. This was the guy they brought in to paparazzi Homer.
Season 29 or something.
Something like that.
He was the best thing about this episode for me, were his scenes, to be fair. Like, it was a good episode, I enjoyed it, and we'll get into all that later, but like, I found whenever he was on that, like, I was laughing a lot at his scenes.
Yeah, and between himself and Albert Brooks, I think
who's Albert Brooks?
Oh, come on, Andrew.
That's a Die Hard Simpsons podcast.
Scorpio.
Oh, yeah. I don't know who the guy is, though.
You didn't see Drive, did you?
Oh, no. Absolutely not.
This is 40.
Wish I hadn't seen that.
Okay, so the dad, Paul Rudd's dad.
Okay.
I feel like we're back to Catch of the Day.
I know. I've seen it, mate.
Our sister podcast, Catch of the Day.
Check it out on Tumblr.
So, shall we get into it?
Did I what? Oh, shall we? Yes. Technical difficulties on Skype. Couldn't fit it in the suitcase. Okay. All right, let's get things started.
Okay, let's dive right into it.
Let's.
First things first, I guess, maybe this is a tradition we can get into, if we can talk about how much we like the couch gang or not.
Yeah, absolutely. It was, if I'm not mistaken, the couch turned into some sort of octopus that
something like that.
Engulfed them all.
Like an alien that ate them, yeah.
Oh, an alien. Octopus. I'm saying it all smug as if like I don't remember. Like, so I think it was an octopus.
What did you think of
it? It's kinda hard. It's kinda hard now, because like crazy. Would have been a classic at the time, you know.
Yeah. Oh, that's so crazy.
Yeah. I thought, you know what, I have in my notes, I have Couch Gag Octo. Even as I was watching it, I thought Octopus, obviously. I thought Couch Gag Octo, fine.
I have Couch Gag Meh.
That's exactly pretty much the same reaction. Yeah, it was, yeah.
So, I guess we start off with the guys sitting in the living room, and they're watching Miss America Girl pageant, which was just straight away and a big smile on her face.
Yeah.
Just,
you knew once they were going to go through the judging panel, that you had someone good.
Like, even before they get to the judging panel, they show you, like, Miss South Dakota, and it's like Mount Rushmore.
You know, the face.
Yeah,
terrible looking.
Like, Virginia, it's like a pack of cigarettes. Like, that's why I love this show so much.
And then they're going through the judges, and it's like, Rowena! And then it's like, Mr. Boswell! Now,
black panelist, Dredrick Tatum! Which, again, you know, how many years before South Park? Like,
yeah, Token. Yeah, exactly. Actually, I never thought of that. That probably would have been fairly, like, you know, racy for 1992. But I believe, before we go any further, that we actually have a clip of said scene, and it also sort of cuts into Marge telling the family that she's going to try out for a play. So let's listen up.
Let's take a minute to meet our distinguished panel of judges. Skincare consultant, Rowena. Syndicated columnist, William F. George. Token black panelist, Dredrick Tatum. And Mr. Boswell, the man behind those infamous worst-dressed lists. Mr. Boswell, can you give us a sneak peek at this year's list?
Memo to Goldie Hawn. Cheerleading tryouts were 30 years ago. Let's grow up, shall we?
He's such a bitch. I haven't been in a play since high school, and I thought it would be a good chance to meet some other adults.
Sounds interesting.
You know, I spend all day alone with Maggie, and sometimes it's like I don't even exist.
Sounds interesting.
Memo to Goldie Hawn, cheerleading tryouts were 30 years ago.
Tell up.
I love the fact that Bart says, bitch.
Yeah, I know.
And Faye's around, he's like, did he just say bitch? And I was like, yeah.
You know it.
He's such a bitch.
Oh, yeah.
And then it's like, it gets to Miss Delaware. It's like, yeah.
I also, one thing I noticed as Marge is telling them all about, like, you know, what she wants to do and all this sort of stuff, like, they're just this horrible family who just aren't listening at all.
I have that in my notes too. She is treated terribly by this family.
Literally, my notes are horrible family! Exclamation point.
Just before we move off the Miss America Girl pageant, there was a quote that was brilliant. It's like, it's Troy McClure. It's like, if you ask me, they're all winners. We'll be cutting our first 30th.
God, he's Miss.
So good.
And then, so what happens after that? Is it the actual tryout or the auditions?
She's singing, she's practicing.
Oh yeah.
Background.
Horrible voice, by the way.
She cooks, terrible. But then she comes to leave, and they're like, Homer's like, where are we?
Oh yeah.
Like, I told you how many times, and the kids back Homer up again.
I know.
Reinforcing this part.
Poor Marge.
Yeah. Then they go to, we move over to the tryout, so the audition.
And I guess this is where we first meet a Mr. Llewellyn Sinclair.
Well, even before he shows up, I have...
Oh, yeah.
I know, it's like a rogues gallery of characters.
No rhyme or reason for this.
Oh, you got Wiggum,
Otto.
Flynn's Otto. Lionel Hutz is his.
Oh, yeah.
Then we get big grand entrance of one Mr. John Lawrence.
Also known as Llewellyn Sinclair. And I think, again, before we go any further, we should just treat here to his introduction. Listen up.
Hello, I am Llewellyn Sinclair. I have directed 3 plays in my career, and I have had 3 heart attacks.
Maybe I should have taken a nice calligraphy class.
Oh, forget about it. That Mr. Takahashi is a lunatic.
Quiet!
All right.
I am not an easy man to work for. While directing Hats Off to Chanukah, I reduced more than one cast member to tears. Did I expect too much from fourth graders? The review, play enjoyed by all, speaks for itself.
So,
absolute classic.
A couple of things I love about that one. One, obviously the end is great, but the 3 plays, 3 heart attacks reminds me of you and your sports day.
Me on the sports day? I think you mean 3 games, 3 goals, man.
3 games, 3 goals.
Still talked about amongst certain circles.
Me and you, not a circle.
That's basically it.
Yeah, and the second part that stood out was when he's going on this tangent, and he's like, the review, play enjoyed by all,
that
says it all.
Is such a funny line where he's like, did I expect too much from fourth graders? The review, play enjoyed by all, speaks for itself.
Speaks for
itself. So funny.
directing Hats Off to Hanukkah.
Oh my god, remembering all these lines, it's so funny.
But then, you know, they get into the audition process for Stanley. It's like, take off your shirts and les amis de chemise, Chanel, Chanel. With flaming skull tattoo on his chest.
Oh yeah. Otto is really a character that I have to say I don't know if I've ever laughed at. And I don't, you know, everyone has their part, but like it was never one for me, like, you know.
Apparently he's Harry Shearer's.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm kinda not surprised.
Any episode that's an Otto episode, and there's not too many, so we're okay, but like,
yeah,
you know, a little bit part players.
And then I guess when it goes to, they're all sort of singing for him, like when they're all auditioning, and it's like, Marge is really like the worst one, but like one I really love was when Chief Wiggum's like, "Law, next." Yeah, and Marge was right for him to shout next. Absolutely awful,
yeah,
voice.
Absolutely. Then I do. You know what? I love that there's loads of stuff going on in the background in the episode. But then, you know, when he's saying, "Oh, forget it," you know, this is finished. Her on the phone to Homer.
Oh yeah. He's like,
I don't know,
like,
why the line stuck with like, extra skin on the chicken.
And the fact that like you just see it in the background again, I don't know if that's the sort of the way, something like that, if they'd have done it that way in a newer season, you know what I mean? I don't know why it just sort of stood out as very old timey Simpsons to me.
Yeah,
and then
it did seem that way, but you know, it's a great moment as well when she's doing that. She's real sad. Lovitz legs it over, slams down the phone.
Stop bothering my bitch.
That was kind of stereo, almost.
What?
I said that was kind of in stereo.
Did it at the same time? I didn't even hear.
Yeah. So next scene is we're at the dinner table.
Yeah.
Marge is explaining Clay to her family.
Is that where Homer's like, sounds interesting?
I think it's more like it's the kitchen, it's the breakfast table, sorry, but it's she's telling him about how it is, and Bart asked the question, are there any jive talking robots?
It's
like, don't ask stupid questions. Homer then of course comes in with any frontal nudity. I don't know, that, you know, it's okay.
It's fine. I mean, one thing I always notice when they're at the dinner or when they're at the dinner table or the breakfast table is that they eat like absolute pigs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like absolute pigs. There is a scene. I don't know if there's more that you wanted to talk about the sort of breakfast scene, but
I just thought it was real. Like, there's no point for it really.
It was filler.
And then it was the back of the play.
Yeah, next scene, like, yeah. But
next
one
scene, the back of the play, and everybody's introducing themselves, and I did like this scene.
can I do the honors?
Yeah, go ahead.
when Marge is like, I made some peanut butter brownies for everyone. And he said, I genuinely forgot this line. He's like, would anyone else like a bite of banality?
That's great.
Classic John Lewis.
Beforehand, when it's like, you know this is coming, you can see the wind-up of the pitch a mile away.
Yeah.
A poo that has a peanut butter petal on.
Yeah.
My name is Otto, I'm playing Pablo.
Lyle Hood's attorney at law. I'm filing a class action suit against the director on behalf of everyone who was cut from the play. I also play Mitch. And then I suppose this is where sort of Maggie's arc comes in, because she's sort of in the way, and he recommends a daycare center. And was it run by his sister? Is that?
Yeah, he says his sister runs a daycare center, and then it's kind of putting Flanders glasses on, and disrupting the whole thing. So next scene is they're over at the Anne School for Tots.
And I was very surprised, as we mentioned at the start. Now, we have a clip of this coming up, but I was very surprised when I read that this was also John Lovitz. I genuinely didn't know that for all these years.
I knew it.
25 years. Die Hard Simpsons podcast.
Can we just actually jump back to that last scene?
Oh, yeah.
With the director, Llewellyn St. Clair. I have my notes here. His outfit, which was, he has like some sort of brown hat and a purple scarf on. And he's like, oh, I just gotta crawl into the bed with a bottle of Amarillo. And you know, it reminds me so much of the director from Friends. Remember the guy?
Yeah.
The
I am hurt. Just a complete eccentric, like, doesn't have his emotions in check at all. But we have a clip of Maggie getting put into the daycare center, or well, Marge speaking with the daycare center owner. So listen out and listen to John Lovitz as, does she have a name in the script?
Miss St. Clair, I assume.
Let's call her Miss St. Clair.
Maggie is allergic to strained pears, and she likes a bottle of warm milk before nap time.
A bottle? Mrs. Simpson, do you know what a baby's saying when she reaches for a bottle?
Baba?
She's saying, I am a leech. Our aim here is to develop the bottle within.
That sounds awfully harsh.
Mrs. Simpson, I don't like to toot my own horn, but we're the only daycare center in town that's not currently under investigation by the state.
Oh. Well, be a good girl, Maggie.
Well, there you have it. For some reason, I was always a fan of the line, a bottle?
A bottle?
like, you know what she's saying? I am a leech. And I like the way she's like, I don't like to toot my own horn, but we're the only daycare center in town that's not currently under investigation by the state.
I actually must apologize, Andrew. I blew my wad, so to speak. That that scene I was just talking about there.
Apology not accepted.
The scene with the bottle of amarillo as well. He's trying to get marriage this next day and just smash the bottle.
Alright.
It's not happening.
Thank God someone but me made a mistake.
Flanders trying to teach her how to smash the bottle. He's like, I usually give her one of these. There's the old face better.
Plus, I always like the line that Flanders used where he's like, hate to be an armchair Blanche, but I always give it one of these.
Mrs. Simpson, if you set out to push the bile to the tip of my throat, mission accomplished. I'm gonna crawl in the bed with a bottle of
amaretto
all day.
Oh, I love it.
So then the next scene is we're in bed with Homer and Marge.
Yeah, again another example of Homer just being a terrible husband. Yeah.
How about that, huh?
Yeah, I never even thought of that. Did you ever have a Game Boy when you were a kid?
Yeah, I was a Nintendo man.
Yeah, you were a Nintendo man. GameCube. I was a Sega man.
Yeah, GameCube.
I had that as well, short-lived. But anyway, I digress.
Okay.
So, yeah, he's like, Gutterball, you see, when you're off in your own little world, you forgot people have real problems too.
Yeah. So then we move on to Maggie back at daycare.
You know what though? I don't know if am I jumping the gun here again? Sorry, go on ahead.
It's just Maggie is back at daycare. They do the whole Great Escape parody. She's trying to get her soother back.
Yeah. I always liked that scene as a kid. I never actually seen The Great Escape.
It's great. Yeah.
Is it though? If I watched it tomorrow, would I enjoy it?
You should enjoy it. If there's anybody but you, probably they would enjoy it.
I knew you were going to say that.
You'd be like, oh, the picture's a bit grainy.
Boring.
It's not old. It's not new enough for me.
Well, I do say that. Well, at the after that one, like, there was something that I wanted to point out, because I think, unless you have any more to add from that scene, do you?
I was it's one of the first things where, looking back on it, I was like, okay, they really do the movie parodies really well.
Yeah.
But also it's kind of a precursor or foreshadowing to, like, Maggie being the badass baby character that she becomes. And I was thinking to myself, well, kind of was ridiculous the way it got in later series, but here they are back here doing it then, like, you know.
Yeah, so they obviously had that sort of idea from the start. One thing that I really liked is when she's gone down from the ceiling on that Krusty doll, and, like, every time the string pulls, like, hey kids, I'm flame retardant. And then she's coming back up, like, if I break, buy a new one.
No, I think that's, and then, you know, she gets put in the box, and that's the real, the iconic Great Escape bounce of the ball.
Yeah.
That's where in the Great Escape he's put in solitary confinement.
Oh, right. Someone gave him a ball to keep him sane.
So it was a stone he had, and he was.
Oh, right.
One
thing that I wanted to point out in the next, at the start of the next scene, right? When, like, Homer is picking up Marge from rehearsal.
Well, that's not quite the start of it.
Is it not?
Well, the start of it is, all right, let amateur night in Dixie commence.
Amateur.
Yeah.
Couldn't she just take his abuse with gentle good humor? But,
and then Homer shows up.
But that's one thing, and I was actually watching it with Carrie, and she pointed out that, like, they're just horrible to Homer here. Like, Homer doesn't actually do anything. He just comes up and he's like, Marge, your ride is here. And then straight away, she's like, it's like, it'll just be a minute more or whatever like that. And then,
No, I disagree with you.
No, but hold on. Because then there was that. And then, so he's like, okay, I'm going to get some, you know, change for the candy machine. And Lamell Sinclair smashes a whole load of pennies or whatever on the ground. He's like, oh, here. He's like, this guy's just here to pick her up. Like,
in rehearsal, this moron comes in, Marcus is right here, like, just being real obnoxious.
He's just rough around the edges.
I have in my notes, he's as obnoxious as I've seen him, especially towards Marge. Like,
definitely. I mean, in this episode, definitely. But I just thought that particular scene was like, if he has a stand scene, not within the context of the episode, they like he doesn't get treated very well.
Anyway. He throws the coins on the ground, and Homer's picking them up.
Yeah.
It's just, I have in my notes here that, like, just a fantastic gag when he's at the vending machine in the background, Homer.
Yeah.
And it's like, he's telling her how to act or whatever, and you see Homer, you know, hitting with the machine. Come on, come on. He runs off and then comes back in, just like a flying kick.
I remember as a kid absolutely cracking up at that bit as well. Because you really do think he's gone as well.
Yeah. So, you know, they do the whole thing when Marge's Homer outside honking the horn, again, being quite obnoxious.
Quite obnoxious.
And then Ned can't overpower Marge. Something about this, the way she pounces on Ned.
Turn you on.
No.
Oh, excuse me. Me neither.
No, but there is something the way it's like, as if they're gonna get it on, like.
Yeah, kinda.
You know. Yeah.
I really like the way they made, they gave Flanders like a great body.
Yeah.
I just think that's such a funny little thing to his character, like that he's actually ripped. Oh, yeah.
She's got to stay in character, she says. And Lisa, of course, chimes in. She wants to help Marge, so she starts doing the southern accent as well.
Yeah.
Bart decides he's going to talk with a Cockney accent.
Yeah. And, I wasn't a big fan, well, of that part of the scene. The end... It's funny, but I wasn't part of the whole accent thing.
I think the line that, and it always stuck with me, is I'm living in a cuckoo clock. Someone puts his hands on his head, you know, everything's going crazy around them.
Well, what I like, when Marge leaves. Now, yeah. I should say, I think we should play a little clip of this first, because it's an iconic scene from the movie and from the episode. But basically, Marge is leaving, tells Homer that he can get his own dessert, and then you see the Hey Marge scene. So we will listen to the clip first, and then we'll talk about it.
Ooh, see you later, kids. I've got to go rehearse with Ned.
But Marge, what about dessert?
For God's sake, you can pull the lid off your own can of pudding.
Fine, I will. Ah! Oh no, my pudding is trapped forever.
So I can open my own can of pudding, can't I?
Shows what you know, Marge. Marge! Hey, Marge!
Keep yelling, you big ape.
Aren't you being a little hard on old homie?
Oh, forget about him. Let's rehearse the bottle scene.
Let's not say we did.
I was actually a big fan of the animation for when he's like, hey, Marge!
Can you think of a time that The Simpsons parody was reincarnated with that scene?
Yes. I do. It was Smithers and Mr. Burns. Smithers.
Mr. Burns, out of this.
Oh god, so many good episodes to go.
Can't wait till we get to a Smithers Burns episode.
Oh my god. No, because I know I'll save most of this for the end, but like, as marriage episode, I think this is probably my.
This is up there.
Top tier.
Yeah, very. It's very. I mean, it's about marriage, but then it involves some very strong other characters, and there's some very strong.
Yeah, exactly.
So they're in Flanders' bed. Where's his wife?
Yeah, it's a good question, actually. Where is his wife? And
why is it his bedroom? Yeah, he has a top off, no wife.
Why don't they do it downstairs in the living room on the couch, like?
Yeah.
I never even thought of that.
They do it so they can do the movie parody, but still, like. Yeah. I like the fact that Madness has a cut on his chest.
Yeah.
From the bottle. Like,
And what's the scene after that? Because I'm getting mixed up here.
No, and then the next scene is like, they're in bed, Marge is wearing her, hair mitt or hair hat.
Whatever the hell it is, yeah.
Yeah, they're talking about Homer's asking her what time the play starts, and he says he has to go. She says he's sure she won't enjoy it, there's nothing about bowling play. No, wait, there is, which I thought was great. Probably not much of it. But this part here where he's like, she's like, can't you be more supportive? And he's like, because I don't care. Like, just flat out tells her.
Because I don't care, okay?
I fake an interest in all your stuff. Like,
it's so. That's sort of an issue that I have with a lot of shows, is that, like.
Remind American Dad.
I was just going to say that, because it's like. The dad or whatever, it's so obviously flawed for like 18 of the 20 minutes in the episode where he's just a complete and utter like jerk. Yeah, and then like the last two, it's like, I'm sorry, dear. And then it's like, oh, it's okay.
Oh, sad. And then Marge asks, why did he tell her he felt like this way? He's like, you know, I'd never do anything to hurt your feelings. Good night.
Good night.
He's asleep, guys. But I just found, again, like, I keep going back to, like, how much of an arsehole Homer is.
Yeah. That's one thing I really don't remember about this episode, is that how much he was just, like, just a blatant, not even, like, you know, he could be construed as, like, no, just a full-on dickhead in this one.
I have in my notes, he's really laying it on thick with the arsehole stuff.
I think that pretty much sums it up. And then
we're back. Sorry, go on.
I was gonna say then we're back to the daycare center.
We're back to the daycare, and the teacher walks out, and again they're doing sort of Great Escape again. You know, this is actually the time with the Krusty doll, and it's kind of Mission Impossible stuff.
Yeah, I always liked that scene as a kid. I mean, I never seen the actual movie. So this was the first time and only time that I've seen a scene like that.
This came before Mission Impossible movie, but it's a similar thing. But I really like the part where she doles out all the doggies.
Yeah.
And then Homer comes to collect Maggie. I have in my notes as well, like, there's a giant plot hole here because the teacher is just disappeared then.
Yeah, where's she gone?
Where's the teacher? Like,
I never really thought of that. Like, she just allows him just to go on in.
But like, she's just gone, you know, they get the soothers back and then the teacher's just gone.
She has no further part to play in the episode, like.
Yeah, but they don't even write her out, so she goes out a door and it's just.
That's the last you see of her.
Have a heart attack? It's lying. In the toilet somewhere.
I never even noticed that, actually. She just completely. She was in like two scenes where you think she's going to be like a major a plot point in the episode, and it's like, she's just gone.
It's like Homer shows up, and it's, you know, all the kids there, and it's a great reference to the birds, you know, again, oh, yeah. A great movie reference. It's fantastic, and Homer's like, ooh, babies.
Now, I do have a clip of this. I don't know, should I stick it in here?
Yeah, definitely. It's very good audio.
I always liked, in particular, the audio. Just the sound of all those soothers going at once. Something oddly therapeutic about it.
Okay.
Maggie, time to go to the...
seen your man with the dog, but I didn't get the reference.
You, sir. It's amateur. Hitchcock.
Oh, is it?
Alfred Hitchcock appeared in every one of his movies, normally just walking by or something like that. Like, and they're doing a reference to the birds with all the babies sucking.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I never even got that.
Walk by with dogs. Of course.
Can you do us a favor? I'll mic a bit closer to you. There we go. Yeah, I knew when we got to record this episode that that was going to mean something, and I wasn't going to know what it was. I was like, what the fuck is that?
So we're at the main event.
Oh, yes. The play.
We're at the musical, the play.
And before we even get into this, now I know, like, there's a bit of a scene before the play starts and all that, but I was very, like, I never really cared much for the songs when I was a kid, because it was like, oh, songs. But, like, when you're older, and they're actually really, really good and funny, like.
They're so good.
Yeah.
I do like that scene that I can have it beforehand. He says, you'll be transformed from dead-eyed suburbanites into white-hot grease fires of entertainment. Except you, you're not working out. I'll be playing your part.
Drake.
Drake. And then it kicks off with a great song. The controversial song.
New Orleans.
How it's Cheap Wiggum opening it.
Long before the Superdome.
Long before the Superdome.
Now, I have the song here. Shall we play the clip so people can listen to the lyrics and see why it was so controversial?
Yeah.
Boom. Enjoy the song, folks.
Long before the Superdome, where the Saints of football play, lived a city that the damned call home. Hear their hellish Rondelay.
New Orleans, home of pirates, drugs, and whores. New Orleans, tacky, overpriced souvenir stores. If you want to go to hell, you should take a trip to the Sodom and Gomorrah on the Mississippi. New Orleans, stinking, rotten, vomity, vile. New Orleans, putrid, brackish, maggoty, foul. New Orleans, crummy, lousy, rancid, and rank. New Orleans.
What's the matter, honey? Are you lost?
I'm looking for my sister, Stella.
Stinking, rotten, vomity, vile. New Orleans.
What's their problem?
Brackish, maggoty, foul. New Orleans. Crummy, lousy, rancid, and rank. New Orleans.
My favorite line of the whole song is overpriced souvenir stores. If you want to go to hell, you should take that trip to the Sodom and Gomorrah on the Mississippi. Yeah. I was cracking up with that.
They barrel through a few songs, which, and one after another, they're great. Like,
yeah.
Well, I don't know. Maybe we'll do a little who won?
I wasn't mad at that one myself.
Will this bewitching floozy?
Well, and then one thing that I really... That's a poo's calling card, is that high-pitched? No. And then, like, the next song, now, I don't have a clip of it, but the one where... I don't know why I thought it was so funny, because it's so not fitting with the theme of the play, that it's like, whoever you are, I have always depended on the kindness of strangers. Like, you can always depend on the kindness of strangers.
They completely undercut the fact that she's supposed to be taken to a mental hospital. Yeah. In the actual play, she's getting taken to a madhouse. It's like, you can always depend.
And actually, I have actually skipped one as well, because we do have a clip of the, it's a very short one, but the one
would you say this is your favourite song?
I think so. It was very, just, again, it's the same thing, that it's like, it's not in keeping with the theme at all, and it's just like, anyway, the clip, and then we'll talk about it.
Stella! Stella! Can't you hear me, Ella? You're putting me through hella. Stella! Stella!
I love the fact, like, it's like, it starts out as like such a dramatic, it's like, Stella, can't you hear me, Ella?
Putting me through hella.
Stella.
Stella.
And then, is that the end of the actual play?
At the end of the play is Kindness of Strangers.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then, people out there, you're not. Eddie and Lou jumped out of the audience like,
yeah, and the fire just looking at Homer, and Homer's just looking at the ground like, even if he was like
a clap or whatever, wouldn't you, like,
yeah, like, she's, you know, she's gonna be looking out for you, like, at least just clap, like, not being like, again, all about your own feelings.
So they're backstage, and Homer tells the kids to go to the car, and basically, Homer says she was terrific, Marge says, you were so bored, you could barely keep your head up, he said he wasn't bored, he was sad.
Yeah, basically he felt like that character.
Stanley should have been nicer to her, and all that, and not that it was a bit of a cheat, but I guess Marge knows what she's getting with Homer, and what her lot in life is.
Yeah, like, and for him, that was good.
Yeah, exactly that.
Like, yeah.
Then they walk out into the alley together, and he says, I'm a lot like that Stanley guy. And then Marge's like, really? Do you think so? And they have a nice little moment.
Yeah, like, well, maybe just a little.
And that's what we're talking about with the heart and stuff, like, you know.
I did quite that scene, like the very last scene, the way they come out the side entrance, it's night time, you know.
Yeah.
I thought it was quite well done. But again, like, you can't have Homer being a complete arsehole for 98% of the episode, and then he's like, oh. And then again, it's sort of like, it's not like you were great, it was just like, it's like, oh, it's kind of about, the whole play is kind of about me. You know? Not like, well done. Yeah. Well done,
Marge,
for putting yourself out there, Marge.
Yeah, Marge is gonna get away with it, murder, like.
Yeah. It's got a cushy ride. And then the credits roll.
Yeah.
Shall we into our thoughts?
Ratings.
Ratings.
How do you find the defender?
So, Andy.
On paper, when I seen this was the next one, I was like, ugh. Well, I was like, well, let's just get it. We can get to the good ones, because, you know, you first see Marge episode, thank you, Marge or Lisa. But I was actually pleasantly surprised. Maybe it was because I was going in with such low expectations, you know, a good few times. But I actually thoroughly enjoyed it. Very short to me. I don't know why. Like, very short.
It seemed longer when I was younger, I guess.
Yeah. Like, it didn't... It seemed like it was only maybe 15 minutes long or something. I know it wasn't. But I don't know. But all in all, I liked it.
I think that is. Yeah. Just because it's... They're at the rehearsals. They're back to the house at the rehearsal. It's kind of just the same two, three locations for the whole thing.
But yeah.
It doesn't really jump around all over the place. So it kind of seems like...
It's not that grand, like...
Yeah, exactly that. Like, so yeah. Sort of zipping along, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I liked it. I wouldn't say I love it. It wouldn't go in my... Excuse me. It wouldn't go in my top...
unbelievable.
Oh, I'm still going here. Stinks over here. Thank God we're doing this by Skype. I would probably give it a 7.2 out of 10. Seven heart attacks and a big ham sandwich out of 10.
Where's the ham sandwich coming from?
I don't know. they contribute to heart attacks, right?
Terry? I would say directing plays contribute to heart attacks. I'm asking how many heart attacks.
Well, what would you give it, smart guy? Eight out of ten.
Yeah, I think so. It drummed along quite nicely.
I mean,
when I was watching it back, there was a lot of stuff where I was like, "Oh, geez, that's so good!" Like the music really, was great.
The music was great.
Like John Lovett's character, like that character really elevated the episode for me.
100%.
They don't, as you know, as you see the series. Character, you knew exactly who he was the minute he came in.
Yeah, and back in the day, it was they had these great voice actors, but they were playing
they weren't playing themselves.
Yeah, it's teen icon Britney Spears. That's right, Lisa. Yeah. No, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Alec Baldwin and Kim Basinger maybe the exception to the rule.
Yeah, they were great.
But I thought that was good. Flanders had a lot to do.
Yeah.
I'm always a fan of. He's pretty underrated as a character, Flanders.
Yeah. Flanders
he always has a couple of great one-liners.
Flanders is one of those characters that I think. he's one of those characters that I definitely like more the older I get, where you spot his little quirks or the little things that he says that's not the big laugh, but it's really good.
It's we're not going to grandma's. Sometimes you have to tell people what they want to hear. It's my favorite.
But, yeah, I think all in all, I was satisfied enough with the episode. For, an episode that's 25 years old, I think it still holds up pretty good. Llewellyn Sinclair. Without him, it would be a solid 6 point something. But his bits, he provides the laugh out loud moments in the episode.
You couldn't re-substitute him for one of the Simpsons regulars, you get me?
Yeah.
You couldn't put...
Lionel Hutz?
Yeah, he's not going to be, running the play,
Yeah, true.
So
I'm trying to think who could conceivably, go into that role without it seeming too strange.
What I was thinking of was maybe the music teacher or something. But he would be.
Yeah, he doesn't really provide the laughs. No. John Lovitz has a voice as well that was kind of made for voiceover work.
Yeah, it really has that.
Perfect voice for it. Did I expect too much from fourth graders?
Hats off to Hanukkah.
So, do you have anything more to add for this episode?
No, that's pretty much us wrapped up, I think. I will say, if you want to drop us a line or anything like that, any questions or feedback, or, you know, if you've spotted something that we haven't or anything like that, you can email us at putitinhpodcast@gmail.com.
That's putitinhpodcast@gmail.com. Yes, so it would be good to hear some feedback or to hear any questions or anything like that.
Are we on Twitter yet?
Yes. Twitter handle to follow. I tell you what, we're not on Twitter yet, but by the time the episode is aired, there will be a link to our Twitter page, so you can check us out there.
What's our next episode, Andy?
Our next episode is Homer the Heretic.
Let me ask you, what's your religious belief?
Well, I didn't think we were going to get into that here, Terry.
Me? I was born a snake handler, and I'm going to die a snake handler.
I was genuinely going to ask, or going to answer the question. I didn't get the joke. But really looking forward to actually Homer the Heretic, one of the classic ones.
Great stuff.
And I think as well that we should start doing, similar to the Signcast lads, in start coming up with our top 20. And
well, I would say maybe save that for the end of season
5.
No, as in at the end of season recap, like what's our top 5, bottom 5.
I suppose, yeah. Well, the reason why I'm even saying it is because when I see Homer, when I see Homer the Heretic, like, I'll have that one earmarked to go straight in somewhere into my top 20.
Yeah, we can do that. Listen, we're giving them too much inside baseball here,
all right? We're showing them the fourth wall.
We'll have a production meeting tomorrow. We
This wasn't at the production meeting.
We just got off a cliff.
Surprise me in practice. Anyway. Don't surprise me live on air.
Alright, we'll do a live.
But looking forward to that one. And
tomorrow.
We are going to try and do them once a week. I think we've got our technical glitches sorted. So I know this one was a few weeks after the first. But the next one should be a week after this one. And from there on, we are also on iTunes, so please subscribe and rate and comment, and you can listen on all good podcast apps, whether it's Podcast Addict or whatever the hell it is that you use. And yeah, anything else?
No.
All right. Well, until thanks. Thanks for listening. I got nothing else.
Right,
all right. I'll see you guys later.